Good evening, everyone. Wonderful to see you, to be back with you, having been away last week. Some of you on this screen were also with me last week, but the majority no. And so if I think about the difference about being here or being there or doing one thing or doing another, I become lost in trying to understand, trying to describe. And then I read something recently. It was a quote from a Japanese teacher of some kind, I think, I forget, who said that, you know, he was talking about life in general. And he said, what should I compare this life to? And he said, even before I say it's like a flash of lightning or sometimes we say a snowflake or a dewdrop or something. As soon as I say that, then it's not that anymore. And I have the same impression of if I try to say, oh, this is where I was yesterday, or this is what I did last week, or any sort of roundup, you know, some kind of explanation misses the point. And so then I say, okay, well, what are we doing here then? And what we're doing is, as you know, this is the goal or the path of. The path is the goal, but the path, there is no path unless there's questioning, seeking, curiosity. If we look at the example of the person who started this whole business, the person we call the Buddha, he left home, he left his family, he left his comfort of his privileged life, because he was looking for the truth about life and the meaning of his existence. He didn't go attracted by some religion or some god or some faith in or attraction to a charismatic teacher, guru, something like that. He didn't go he didn't trade some previous belief that he had into another belief. And we know, a lot of the teachers who come, the Buddhist teachers who come to the West, notably the Dalai Lama, but also Thich Nhat Hanh always said this. Don't exchange your you were raised in a Christian faith, don't exchange it for another faith. That's not the point. And was really, Thich Nhat Hanh is now dead, but the Dalai Lama always has tried to dissuade people from becoming something, some Buddhist or something. Because this path is spiritual in nature. It's not religious. And it's a path of freedom. It's not a path that will take you to heaven. There's no heaven in this path, on this path. There's freedom. Freedom. And intimacy, which sometimes is called self-knowledge, or wisdom, something like that. It's not knowledge about something, or it's not understanding. It's knowledge that transcends, surpasses understanding and belief. So when I try to find, you know, I like I said last week, we were in a completely different situation. And it made it even more clear to me that it has nothing to do with all of the rituals and the forms and the all of the paraphernalia that we associate with our path. The Buddha, when he set off on his quest, he was not involved with any of the paraphernalia, the stuff that we are involved with. And he tried the path that was proposed to him, leaving behind his comforts, which were not satisfactory for him, didn't answer the questions that he had, and followed a path of, as we know, you know, a really, really extreme path of renunciation, even physical renunciation, starving himself practically, and thinking that if he could renounce the body, that would extinguish desires, and then he wouldn't be stuck. He wouldn't want any of the things anymore that he had had before. And he thought he would be free then of the comforts he had had before and of all of the desires for the things that he had had before. We know this story, right? We've heard this story many times. But I like the aspect where, so he goes and he's seeking, he's questioning. I identify very much with that because that was my own path too, was questioning, wanting to know, having no idea about any of what we do now. And so he goes and tries this extreme path because that's what someone was teaching and proposing. And he did that for a long time. Years, several years he did it with some partners, with some other people. And it got to the point where he couldn't do it anymore. He gave up. He said, I can't do this anymore. This is not what I'm looking for. And that reminds me of what Bernie Glassman used to say, that when someone would ask him, how do I know if this practice is for me? Talking about Zen practice. And Bernie said, the way to know if it's really for you is to do it completely. And then either you will discover that it's for you, you'll do it completely and you'll say, ah, yes, this is my practice. Or you will do it completely and you will say, no, this isn't my practice. But you have to do it completely. So the Buddha did that. He did this completely. Nearly killed him. And he realized, no, this isn't it. This isn't what I'm looking for. He still doesn't know what he's looking for, but he knows it's not that because he tried it. He collapses. The famous story of the young woman who brings him a bowl of rice milk. He drinks it. His comrades who were there with him are horrified, saying he's broken his discipline. He's not doing it right. They will never speak to him again. And then they leave him alone. They abandon him and leave. But for him, of course, the search is not over. He's tried these other techniques. They didn't work. So he said, okay, I'm just going to sit here until I try to find it. until I see what I'm looking for. So he sits there and sits there and sits there. There's different accounts of how many days, but days and days and days. And then he, as we say, awakens and sees what has come to be called the middle way. But it's not so important what we call it. Because as soon as we say middle way, then we think there's two extremes. And in fact, that's a very dualistic way of looking at it. And what he realized was non-duality. He realized the oneness of life. He realized the non-separation. And he realized that what causes all of the pain and suffering is the separation. He realized this not because he believed in a, it wasn't a belief, it was an experience. And he went seeking for nothing in particular because he didn't know what he didn't even know what he was looking for. And that's where we are following him, except that we have much more baggage. We come to these, you know, there's a lot of information out there for us. And so we read a lot. We hear a lot of teachers talking. We see a lot of different forms. We're attracted to this or that. We reject things or grasp things. Sometimes we like things that are exotic. Sometimes we don't like things that are exotic. Sometimes we like the aesthetic. People are attracted to Zen because of the minimalist aesthetic, the elegance of the cultural and artistic forms. But it's not about any of that, actually. It has nothing to do with any of that. You know, it would be like if we tried to, you know, at some point someone says, okay, well, they think that Zen practice has to happen on a Zoom screen. And we start recreating these practices on a Zoom screen, which in fact, we just started doing the Zoom screen because it was a skillful means. It allowed many people to practice together. I mean, on this screen, we have people in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Well, 6, I'm not sure where Joa is. 6, 7, 8 or 9 different places, cities, not to mention countries. We have 3 countries here, 4. No, 3. And that would not have happened. We would not have been doing this 5 years ago like this. It doesn't mean that this becomes orthodox and this is how it should be done. This is how it is right now because it's a way for us to be together and look into the truth of our being. We were talking on the train coming back from the retreat. I just thought of this and how I don't even remember what we were talking about, but it came up about how in our retreats and in the retreats of Dana Sangha's retreats, when there's a transmission, there's always a big party and a show and people perform. We also did this at Deshin Sholing, but on a much smaller scale. But there were fewer people and fewer notice and whatever. And we were talking about that and we were laughing about some of the shows and the performances and things and which one was best, whatever. And I said, well, you know, at my transmission, there was no show. But I was the first one and nobody knew to do a show. And so there was kind of just, there was a low-key party in the dining hall. It was, you know, peanuts and chips and beer and wine or something, you know. However, there had been lunch, informal lunch, after the coming out ceremony. And the only performance that was done was my Dharma sister, Betty, and my daughter, Morgan, who sang a song together. And they both are beautiful singers. And the song they sang was called Throw It All Away. Or Throw It Away. Throw It All Away. Does anyone know that song? It's kind of like a jazz. Is it Throw It All Away or Throw It Away? Joe, do you know?
Throw It Away.
Throw It Away. And it was beautiful. And it was like so appropriate. After this huge thing, you know, this big ceremony, and there's 100 people there, and it was, you know, like my teacher's teacher was there, and there's all these robes and ceremonial stuff, and the song, Throw It Away. It doesn't mean it's worthless. It means don't hang on to it. Every moment new, start again. And the night before, as I was going to the final ceremony, Genpo, my teacher's teacher, had said to me, Amy's not coming back. Which is another way of throw it away. So throw away that identity. Of course, as you know, I'm still sitting here speaking to you. I survived COVID, bad COVID. Survived lots of other kind of stuff, but I'm still here. But not that I threw it away. I try to keep throwing it away. For all of us, for myself, but for all of you too. Like I said, I can identify with the story we hear about the Buddha because that's my own quest was like that. And our koan practice is about that. Our koan practice is about questioning, curiosity, wanting to know without even knowing what it is that we're looking for. Because as soon as we start knowing what we're looking for, well, then we have to throw it away again. You know, there's the famous story, the Japanese, or probably Chinese, actually. Might even be a koan, I don't know. But some kind of dignitary, you know, a local, you know, governor or something, comes to see a Zen master. Maybe even like the national teacher or something. And the teacher serves him tea. And first of all, the dignitary, the governor, is there telling him all kinds of things about how wonderful it is to be here and how probably some small talk, or weather, whatever, going on and on and on. And so the teacher starts serving him tea. And keeps pouring and pouring and pouring and pouring and pouring and pouring and pouring. And the teacher, the guy just keeps on talking. The governor keeps on talking until it's overflowed and spilling. And then the governor is, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? That's kind of our story, you know? We just keep filling up our bowls. There's another koan, which have you had your breakfast? Yes? Well, then wash your bowl. Of course, it's literally just clean up after yourself, but it's also throw it away, throw it away, throw it away, throw it away. Liberating. So liberating. And then we have a better chance of waking up to who we truly are, or waking up to, you know, maybe even waking up to the fact that we've been asleep Like we, you know, we have two lives, and the second one begins when we realize we only have one, right? So this waking up is waking up to when we were, to the fact that we are sleeping. And the more stuff we put, you know, the more we accumulate of what we think is knowledge, what we think is what we hang on to, you know, belief, people, possessions, positions, whatever, then the more we have to throw away, actually. So, you know, when we think of it in this way, it really seems odd, doesn't it, that there should be, you know, that there should be these paths that are so, well, even the Buddhist path has become so, structured and caught up in things that are not really important. All of what we think of as religions are originally spiritual paths, and then they become solidified, and people don't throw things away anymore, you know? And then they start attaching to the solid aspects of it and the forms and the rituals instead of the spirit. The spirit is from breath, you know, of the from the Latin spiritus. It's breath. And when we become caught by all of the heavy stuff that we've loaded up these paths with, then we kind of like out of breath. We're kind of suffocating under it all. Yeah. So I'm actually quite happy that at my transmission ceremony, they sang that song, Throw It Away. It was really, and that was the only performance, was that, Throw It Away. And it was very kind of spontaneous. Everyone was still sitting at their tables eating, and they stood up and sang it. But, you know, the Buddhist path was spontaneous as well. He threw it all away. His son did, though, come with him. His wife died. But his son did come with him. So he didn't throw it away. He threw away what was binding him. He didn't throw away his people he loved. And in fact, what was binding him, he didn't really even need to throw it away. He just needed to let go of it. And that's the same for us, actually. So because this is a path of questioning and curiosity and inquiry, I'd open it up for you to, if you have questions or comments or, something you'd like to add. It's kind of funny, isn't it, that I sit here and talk about, you know, not filling your heads with ideas. And I always tell people not to read books. And then I have, you know, this is the whole book, array of books behind me. So it's a contradiction, I understand. But I'm free to contradict myself.
Wow. Hello, good evening, everyone. Just a very short story. Actually, I think I remember this episode a couple of weeks ago also. It was a writing workshop that you did in Lisbon a couple of years back. And there was this amazing exercise. We had, I think we went outside somewhere, and we were supposed to take notice of whatever along the way, going, staying somewhere and coming back. I think we went to Gulbenkian, to the garden. I think we sat there and then we came back, and we were supposed to just go. I don't even think it told us to pay attention. I think we just went, actually. Then when we came back, we were supposed to write, everyone was supposed to write whatever they could remember from that, all those moments. And then we read it. So each person would read one line, then the next person would read the next line. And we would go like that, and then eventually someone would run out of lines, but that's we would keep going until we were out of lines. I remember Joanna, I think she had the most, and then for three or four lines she was just reading because no one had. And I remember I had this idea that it would be very nice to collect all everything that was had been written and sort of reconstruct or something what we had just done. You said it was like a mandala, what they do when they do the mandala, and then in the end we, you know, just and I come back to that story often, actually. What would be the point of keeping it? It was that, it was there, it was in that moment. I'm talking about the whole experience of reading. It was beautiful, it was amazing, it was huge. But yeah, doesn't make sense to keep it. What would we keep? What would we keep? What would I keep? What did I want to keep? It was there, it was then, yeah.
Well, and I think, which is usually when I do that exercise, it's you know, it's from Guillaume Apollinaire, Il y a.
Yes, exactly.
You had to, every sentence had to begin, but it was in Portuguese. So what was it, the beginning? Right, okay. And so every sentence had to begin like that. So everyone just... Yeah. There is this, there is this, there is this, there is that, there is this, there is this, there is this. And present tense. And of course, it's, as soon as you've said it, it's not that anymore. You know? Then there was something else, and something else, and something else. Yeah. It was beautiful, huh? It's always beautiful, really, that, yeah.
So, just came to mind. And
thank you.
Share it with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Debbie.
Yeah, it's lovely to see you all. Are from some friends from different children coming with us. And Mikael was there this morning and yesterday. It was really nice to for everybody to get together. This has brought to mind one of the strangest things that has ever happened to me in a Zendo, actually, in the Zen context. I was in Belgium and I was head waitress. And there were some people there that I had never seen before and that I never saw again, actually, after this experience. And they were very into Japanese things, they told me. And they had furnished, they had been to Japan, I think. They'd furnished their house in Japanese things and they had Japanese kind of clothes on. They were real chic, very tall woman with a very tall friend. And once the week was, did they stay the whole week or at least at the end of one meal, they said, would you mind at some point coming to our house and doing that ceremony in our house? And what, so I was like, what are you talking about? Just take Orioki out of context and go to their house and have Orioki in their house. Is that what you mean? And then it was sort of like, we would pay you. What are we talking about? But they had fallen in love with the forms and it looked nice and it would go great with their furniture. It was the strangest sensation. I don't think I said any, I didn't try to explain or anything. I just said, no, I don't live in Belgium. I have to go now. But the total separation between what we were doing and how cute it looked, it was the strangest sensation.
Yeah. Lisa?
Yeah, hi. And I'm happy to see our Dish and Trillion friends. So it reminds me of our retreat actually last week, how we were in this beautiful chateau actually. But not at all with its own forms, and the place where we were, the Zendo was the meditation hall with this whole huge altar that was, and we actually turned and did not face the altar, how. What am I trying to say? Just answering to what was there at that moment and making it work with everything and everybody, and the whole place was our Zendo, and the whole staff were there, was also practicing with us, and it was just working out beautifully. And even though we had to change SAMU organization and we didn't have this or that, or it was so as you were saying, once you throw it all out, all away, then you take the ingredients that are there and make it happen, and it's just perfect the way it was. So I thought I just would share that. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, and last week on Thursday, for those of you who were on this screen, it was something else too, right? So always different. Always new. And something about it was Tuesday. Yeah, Tuesday. I had lunch with someone who told me that her ex-husband, who she's been separated from for 20 years, divorced from for 20 years, had died. And how deeply she had been affected by it, even though it had been terrible separation and no contact since for 20 years. They had children together, and just she was surprised at how deeply it affected her. And that she was able to experience it more fully because she let go of the idea that it was her ex-husband, and that she threw away any obstacles that there might have been to what she was feeling, like an idea about what she should feel or not feel, an idea about who he was, who she was, who she had become, who he had become, judgments, just purely allowed herself to feel it. And it was almost more, she said, that she was how did she say? I can't remember what exact words she said, but it was more like she was grieving the, I wouldn't say memory. I can't remember how she said it, but it was like this pure grief to do with the end of something, even though the happy parts that she was remembering had long been over. But she was free to not try to situate it and say, I shouldn't be feeling this way. It just was what was. And she said, you know, it came and went. Whereas if she had tried to put a name on it, categorize it, say, what is this about? This word about is always tricky. Knowledge about something or understanding about something. Or I think I talked about this last week, art being about something. Or her feelings being about something. Even when I say it was grieving, it's too much, actually. And then it becomes pure, not in the sense of untainted or something, or as opposed to being not pure, but unalterated, let's say. There's no blocking. We're not blocking it. In order to do that, we have to throw away all of the stuff that's blocking us. And it so happens that in our spiritual traditions, we've, like I said, we've been buried under all of this stuff. And we really, you know, so last week is a good example, as everyone was pointing out, where it didn't really matter what the form, what the room was like that we were sitting in, or the colors of the cushions, or it didn't really matter. In fact, it doesn't matter. Because this is about freedom, and freedom from attachments to those things. So It doesn't, but when I'm saying this, it's not about denial. It's not denying that there are differences. Of course there are differences. Of course there's blue cushions and black cushions. That's absolutely. But sitting on a blue cushion, push cushion is not better or worse than sitting on a black cushion. Sitting in a chair is not better or worse than sitting on the floor. So again, it's all about freedom. It really is a beautiful path. It really is. Absolutely stunning. And it gets more beautiful every step, every moment. Now that's kind of what Joan was telling about that workshop. That's what's so amazing about it. You know, it's endless, endless. When you start saying there is this, there's 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 this, endless. This morning there's a plant in my house that doesn't even belong to us, but some friends had to move out of their apartment and they didn't have room for all their plants, so we accepted to take some, you know, as in French we would say en pension. Like what do you say, what do you say that in English, like foster parents or something, you know, we accepted to take the plants. Or and my husband loves plants and I'm kind of, and so there's this plant that has just flourished here, big plant. And this morning I went and I noticed that it was starting to bud. There was like a bud that had started. And it seemed kind of crushed against the window. You have these big, you know, wall length, the whole back wall is a window. So the plant was like shoved against it. So I kind of moved it a little bit so that bud wouldn't be pushed against the window. And when I came back this afternoon, it had blossomed. It was this amazing flower. And I don't know if it hadn't blossomed because it was smashed against the window or if it was just its moment for it to blossom. In any case, I couldn't have planned it. You know, if I had wanted that plant to blossom, it wouldn't have probably, but I didn't do anything, let's say. I didn't interfere at all because I don't take care of the plants for one thing, but my husband's away this week. I did nothing. Nobody did anything. And definitely the cats didn't do anything because the plant might not have been still standing if the cats had done something, but just blossom. And that's a metaphor for every moment. We just need to open our eyes. And there's blossoms and rainfall and cars and garbage trucks and I'm thinking of Joa's where when we sit, there's always garbage trucks. The plumber who doesn't call me back. I mean, it's just endless, endless. And that's our path. What is all of that? What is it? It's quite mysterious, you know. What is it? And then, of course, from there we come to, well, who are you? Who are you, really? Sometimes in the writing workshop, we do, instead of the there is, we do I am. Or, and that's, wow. That's a good one too. And then we can read that in a circle too. And then it becomes, so wait a minute. Where is the limit between I am and the next I am? And the one after that, and after that, and after that, and after that. And after that. Freddie.
Hello, everyone. You're talking about throwing things away, but I am guilty of being enamored with things that I have, like I buy a trouser or a pair of shoes and I want to keep it. I love it. I love the things that I have, and it's difficult to throw things away. It's when you talk about it, it's easy, but I know I love these shoes, but I know that these shoes is not going to end, but okay.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm, so maybe it sounds easy when I'm saying it, but it's not. And the, we don't need to throw away any of that, actually. That's not what needs to be thrown away. It's like often we have this belief that in order to be a true Buddhist, you have to give up all your possessions, be ordained as a monk, shave your head, give everything away, right? But actually, that even that is not what it's about. The only thing we have to throw away is the attachment to this, or the, you know, the belief in this illusion of self. That's the only thing that needs to be thrown away. Everything else is derivative of that, you know. All the other attachments come from that one. But if we get rid of that one, then you can have your shoes and your guitars and whatever it is, you know. Actually, you're not the one who has all the guitars, right? That's Thomas, right?
We are all guilty of having a lot of guitars.
Claudia's shaking her head. No, she's not guilty of having a lot of guitars.
No, I need a second guitar, really. I need it. But I don't have it yet.
But yeah, you don't have to throw away all of that. And when you do throw, when you can throw away the I that you're attached to, then it becomes more clear what it is that you need and don't need. And when there's surplus, it's like with Orioki. As we go through the week during a retreat, it changes, you know, and we become aware of what we're grasping and what we're pushing away. And what it is that keeps us from throwing it away, throwing things away. it becomes more clear.
So the problem is not the book, the guitar, or the ideas, is the attachment?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, yeah. 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 Because that's really what binds us. That's what keeps us from being free, is the attachments to it, to ourself, basically, is the one. And as you know, like I start was telling the Buddha's story, when we talk about throwing it away, and he went, there was a misunderstanding there about throw away the body, throw away the health. That wasn't the point. That's not what it's about. Well, we are nearly out of time. So unless someone has something they would like to share, we will stop here and chant the vows. A reminder that we have a study group on Saturday. Joa Sensei circulated the text again for those who needed it. And otherwise, the following Saturday, I think we have a day of practice, don't we? Or is it,
yeah. Yeah, I was going to say.
So there'll be a mail coming out about that too. Okay, thank you everyone.